Hello, everybody, and welcome to Yes, Another Teen Movie. We are back here in the studio after what seems like a long time, actually. It's been a while since we recorded. And so much has happened in that time.
So much has happened. I recovered from Corona. Thanks, guys. I'm okay. I had my birthday party, and Gemma had her birthday party, which I attended because
I had a secret special guest. Heather Yay! Surprised me in London for my birthday, which was so fun. And it was our first time seeing each other in 3 years. Can you guys believe that? Obviously, I feel like I see Heather all the time because I see her little pixelated face on my screen, and we do this together, but nothing compares to the real thing.
Yeah, it was really nice seeing Gemma in real life, which was also nice. That's not a correct way of starting a sentence in English. What also was nice was that at Gemma's party that she threw, I talked to loads of different people that I'd never met before.
Yeah, you met all my friends.
But not just friends, also big fans of the pod. Shout out to them.
Any specific shout outs you want to give?
Rory.
Yeah, shout out to Rory. He's one of our biggest fans, for sure.
His girlfriend, Harriet.
Yeah, she's also
which I didn't get to meet, but apparently big fan. And loads of fun Irishmen that I talked to now that I forgot their name.
Yeah, my friends from university. I don't know if they listen to the podcast, but still great people.
They were nice anyway, so shout out to them.
Yeah. I mean, you're like an okay person if you don't listen to the podcast, but, you know, whatever.
Well, they're never going to know. We're dissing them by... Also, Gemma, I want to check up on you, how you're doing with your challenge of writing a fanfic.
Oh, yeah, that challenge that I definitely remembered and didn't completely forget about until you just said it right now. I've got a lot going on in my life.
Okay.
I'm learning to read tarot. I'm getting French lessons. I'm really trying to. I'm really like trying to find meaning, you know, at the moment.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's kind of a lot going on, but I will try anything once. So maybe fanfic is actually where I'm gonna find the meaning that I'm searching for.
Yeah, so. I think we're gonna smash it. Like, I'm not saying I've started or even decided who I'm gonna write the fanfic on.
Okay, so you haven't got a head start then?
No, I haven't got a head start. I'm not gonna be a famous. They're not gonna be made 3 movies made out of my fanfic before you start. No,
yet.
I'll be a millionaire.
Yet, you never
yet.
Know. What
yet.
Can happen.
So yeah. So want to crack on?
I mean, yeah. What else is there to say or do? Except that we're so happy that After is over.
Oh God, yeah.
And we hope that you guys are too. I mean, you all are freaks because, like we said, like I really didn't think that people had ever have seen these movies, and we had so many comments and messages saying that I binge these films. I love these films. I love to hate them. These films are so dumb. And yeah, you guys are really just like us. You have no respect for yourselves, and you
like the torture.
Yeah, exactly. You're really into masochism. Yeah. What are you guys like in the bedroom? It must be crazy if you watch After in your spare time for fun.
Maybe that's what they put on in the bedroom, and it's
please stop.
It's like Clockwork Orange when you have the eyes open, you know, and you have to watch Harden Scott Harden, whatever his fucking name is, and Tessa interact.
Hard on Scott.
But, like, Gemma, like, After is really, really, really bad. This movie we watched for this week's episode, or month, sorry, we're a monthly podcast, is not much better, I'm afraid.
This movie made me miss After. I'm gonna say
Whoa,
it. I'm gonna say
putting it.
It
out there.
Yeah. After, at least, even though After is, like, so toxic, it's, like, it's melodrama, you know? You can't fail to be slightly stirred by some of the, you know, more emotional or turbulent moments. This film is, like, watching paint dry. Or just, like, just watching a caterpillar crawl along a leaf. That would be more interesting.
Even that would be better.
Yeah, that's like marveling
at
the beauty
of nature.
That's
nature and beautiful, yeah.
This is like a wet dish towel of a film.
It's So, but that the fact that they made a part two must mean that part one raised money. Like, I'm not into... We need to get some people to call in who work in the film industry and know how this work better than we do.
Or specifically streaming. Specifically, like, in Netflix. Yes.
So, please, you know, feel addressed if that's you. Because I'm just so confused because the first one was crap also. But then, there was no hint of a plot that could lead to, like, a part two. Not that the kissing booth had that, actually, but, I mean, so what am I talking about?
They'll always find a way, though, won't they? They will always find a way, these teen movie producers.
But it's crazy.
I know.
It's crazy bad. Crazy boring.
Shock horror, this has, like... And they also just keep copy and pasting the plot. Like, Kissing Booth 2... To All the Boys Before 2, and now Tall Girl 2. It's like, she meets another hot guy who has a quirky talent.
Yeah.
And he slightly tests the very low-stakes teenage relationship that she's in. It's like, whoa, mind blown. Like,
Gemma, we could go home now. You've summed up this whole fucking movie in the first 6 minutes. It's going to be the shortest episode ever.
Okay, does everyone get what Tall Girl 2 is about? Honestly, that explanation that I just gave is the best summary that's out there on the internet. Because before this episode, I went on the Tall Girl 2 Wikipedia, and people care so little about this film that a plot has not been added yet. No one has added a plot to the Tall Girl 2 Wikipedia page yet. I said to Heather that this is our opportunity to have a real influence on popular culture. We could be the ones adding the plot to the Tall Girl 2 Wikipedia page. To be honest, we're probably not going to do it. So if by the time this episode comes out, there still isn't one, perhaps one of you...
Yeah, you freaks.
Industrious listeners, yeah, or freaks, can, like, get on that. But yeah, it was released on... February 11th. That was more than a month ago. And still nothing. That's how much of a splash this movie made culturally.
Imagine if you're part of the production on this. Like, not just like the director, because then you, but just like the person who, I don't know, the caterer or someone watching this movie being made from the sidelines. I don't know, the gaffer or whatever. And what the fuck am I doing here?
Like, oh God, where did my life go wrong? I thought I was going to be with Tarantino by now.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Tall Girl 2. What a drama. Let's get into it.
Yeah, because
I watched it like an hour ago, so it's fresh in my mind, sort of.
I watched it like last week, and I think I've already forgotten most things about it. And I don't even have Wikipedia to remind me, so Heather's going to be carrying us through this episode.
You know what's funny? Also, just I want to say from straight up on the top, that when at the start of this movie, they, well, not bring in these characters, but they... have characters, and I could not for the life of me remember what they did in the last movie. Like, the last movie made no impression on me whatsoever.
Well, isn't it great that the very first scene is them completely recapping every single thing that happened in the last movie?
That is great, yeah. Because
Netflix,
they know what...
knew. Yeah, they knew that people remember, like, this film so low on people's radar that, like, no one's going to remember what happened in the first movie. So they were like, okay, let's orchestrate a scenario where they just lay out the entire plot of the first movie and bring you up to speed.
Yeah, crazy. So she's in this, the start of the movie, she has a relationship with an annoying ducky wannabe who's called Dunkers or Dunkelman.
Dunkers!
Dunkers! And he's so annoying as a character. Oh, so is she. They're both so unlikable. Aren't they?
When Ali and I were watching this, I turned to him and said, I've never been, and he finished my sentence immediately and went, less attracted to a male lead in your life?
Did you know, Gemma, that he has a relationship?
What I was going to say.
He has a relationship with a girl who plays his sister. Or...
What?
They met on the film set of the first Tall Girl, and they have been dating, and they dressed up as Brittany and Justin.
In real life,
I know, right?
She's so hot.
I know.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
And another fact for you.
His name in real life is Griffin Gluck.
Yeah, horrible.
What a dumb name. Go on.
Very dumb name. But the girl who plays the tall girl, Jodie,
yeah.
She was on Dance Moms.
Really?
She got kicked off because she was too tall.
Oh my god, so she actually has suffered oppression for being tall.
Yeah. She talks about this at length.
No wonder she wanted to do this movie. She was like, yeah, it's about time people heard my story and the story of others like me.
Yeah. Shout out to the tall people, yeah. She suffered for her people. She's the Jesus of tall people. The Messiah. Spread the verb, the gospel.
Wow, that's so funny.
Yeah, and I looked at the episode and I was like, oof, Dance Moms, I never watched it, I've never seen it. I was like, this looks like a really depressing show. Like, why would you watch this?
Yeah, no, it's very exploitative, definitely. I've never watched it either. She can dance, though. She was good in her school play. So I was thinking that as I was watching her.
But it was also like, I was confused. So this movie has a lot of, it does a La La Land / Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen-esque thing,
uh-huh.
in which they just like shoehorn in a scene in which people are dancing for no reason. It's like, this didn't happen in the first movie. So I even wrote down, like, was the actress like, give me more dancing bits? And she must have, because she was on Dance Moms. Like, she's a dancer.
That's her thing.
But she's not that, like, she is good, but she's not like amazeballs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe she just wanted to keep it.
She's like, I'm not just tall. There's more to me than height.
I can also dance mediocrely.
With my lengthy arms. Okay, let's just get into. So, we all remember Stig from last film, right? The hall exchange student. Yeah. He's still there.
Yep, still there. Just really doesn't want to go back to Sweden.
Yeah, you'd think like Sweden would be way better than the States, but okay. And so Stig is still there, but you'd think like a new movie would start a year, like in the new year. It feels strange to have the second part start like 3 months after the last one ended.
Yeah, or it could even have been days. But yeah, I think it is 3 months because they're about to celebrate their 3 month anniversary. So yeah, it does. It's pretty hot. The action happens pretty hot on the heels of the last movie. But I guess it makes sense because they wanted Stig to still be a supporting character.
But
he doesn't downfall, I would say.
Yeah, he adds nothing to the movie.
Take that guy out of a like romantic interest role, and he is just surplus to requirements. Such a dull actor and just really, really unfunny lines. He's meant to be a kind of comic relief.
Goofy, goofy European man is how that, like, yeah. That's his role.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's so strange because he's from Europe and he's like, hugs people instead of, like, he ate a beignet the wrong way.
Yeah. Like, Americans are particularly obsessed with depicting Scandinavian people as freaks, I think. Like, they just can't get their heads around, like, Scandinavia. It's just like...
Yeah, it's true.
In movies, they're always like, whoa, they're so weird and tall. And, like, their voices? What's up with that? So, yeah, Stig's, like, really played for laughs, but, like, really not that funny.
And he's beautiful and such an angelic, like... Mm. He's the kind of face that you could see, like, a homoerotic painter doing, like, in the, you know, 16th century, like Caravaggio. You know, he's so, like, beautiful like, got, like, angel-like way. And, like, also, like, Hansen the band, kind of, with the long blonde hair. But,
Yeah. Oh,
that
God,
doesn't
Hannah,
do it for
you're
me.
You're painting such a picture. Like, Caravaggio subject crossed with a Hansen brother.
Yeah, that's him. Look it up.
Yeah, do you mind if I steal that line from my fan fiction? He was like a Caravaggio model crossed with a Hansen brother.
Very specific niche, like people here, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It opens with Jodie and Dunkers in a bag store. She's buying him a backpack as a gift because all these years he was carrying his books around in that milk crate, and the reason that he was using the crate really was because he was hoping that one day he'd get the chance to kiss her, which he had to stand on a crate to do, as you may remember from the end of the last film. I mean, who are we kidding? Who remembers anything about this film? Every time they did a flashback, I was like, oh yeah! Something I've never seen before.
It's funny as well that now Jodie is very popular.
She's the hottest girl in school. Literally every guy fancies her. They actually take it too far. They take it way too far. They take her from being like the school joke to literally every guy in their year having a crush on her, even when it just doesn't make sense for the plot. She does dress better in this film, and she doesn't, way better, and she doesn't have her hair scraped back into that like Croydon facelift ponytail. Fucking hell, she's got kind of loose and kind of wavy. Peachy. She's kind of got a new look, and she's wearing it well. It looks good on her. What doesn't look good on her is having Dunkers as a boyfriend. Oh my god. Okay, I'm not hating on like height differences at all. Like, if you own it, but this is nothing to do with him being short. He is the biggest dweeb. He looks like a 13-year-old. He dresses like a 13-year-old. He has a sense of humor of a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And he's just a very, very, very cringe person. But they are deeply in love at the start of the movie. You know, they did the classic best friends to lovers thing. They're trucking along with their relationship. The only slight fly in the ointment is that a lot of other guys are into Jodie and asking her if she wants to go for coffee or whatever. And Jodie also has a newfound sense of confidence due to this and her, like, the reception that she got from her speech. Where she opened up about being tall at their prom or whatever. And because of this newfound sense of confidence, she decides that she's going to sign up for the school musical,
which is Bye Bye Birdie, which seems like a musical I should have heard of, because everyone's like, it's Bye Bye, and I've never heard of this musical.
Is it real?
Yeah, it's real.
Oh, right. I didn't even know if it was a real musical. I thought it was just made up.
No, I googled it. It's a real musical from the 60s.
Oh. Yeah, this does seem up your street. Dick Van Dyke's in it.
I know, I love Dick Van Dyke.
I know. That's why I said that.
Oh, blow me a kiss. That's lucky too. But what's funny is that she goes to sign up and they're all like cheering her on. She just, even the signing on for the musical gets like apple cider, which is non-alcoholic, I think, in America, and confetti. And it's like, there's way too, like, creepily, her, like, the boyfriend's, he still makes her smoothies every day. Like, why, man? Take a fucking chill pill.
And then
when
she gets the part, he's like, I've got you a kettle so you can make tea so you can save your voice. I've got you a Lemsip. I've got you this. It's too much.
He's like Dance Mom.
He's a dance mom. He's like pathetically, ugh. Anyway.
But when she goes to sign up for the musical, she's sitting like in the, also a really hot, but like in a boring way kind of guy, like generic hot kind of guy, Tommy, who's like, hey man, like, you're Jodie. You really made an impression in the prom, on our homecoming or whatever. And I thought, like, yeah, no way. Her wearing that fucking hideous suit, like, she would have made an impression on me.
How can anyone not notice a 6'1" girl wearing a hideous polyester suit?
Looking like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever wearing stripper heels. Yeah. So, like, insane in the membrane. But yeah, so they have a whole flirtatious thing. He's like he plays her love interest in the musical.
I didn't think he was that boring. I thought he was quite fit.
Yeah, he was hot.
Yeah. Better than Dunkers. But yeah, you don't get to find out a lot about him. They don't really sketch in the characters' backstories as much as they do in like the other Netflix teen movies. Like, he didn't have like a dead mom, for example, or divorced parents, you know, something to give him a little edge, a little depression. So yeah, he was kind of just there. I feel like we're doing a bad job of explaining this plot. Like, we're kind of like doing it thematically rather than chronologically. But hopefully it
doesn't matter.
Yeah, Heather, you're actually so right. It doesn't. A funny thing, a really, really funny thing that Netflix did. They really love breaking the fourth wall these days. Is that when she auditions for the musical, the drama teacher or whatever is like, oh, Jodie, we recognize you from your speech. It's like the whole school is fucking talking about this thing even 3 months later. Like, she's like, we recognize you from your speech at the spring formal or whatever the fuck. what would you say to people who say, you know, being there are what does she say? What are the
worst things than being
worst
tall?
Things being tall,
like...
But she referenced, she's like, there are people who are homeless or refugees or something like that. And she's like, what would you say to people that say that being tall isn't a real problem? Which is hilarious, because that's the exact criticism that this film got when it came out, that people were like,
yeah,
you know, if we want to hear stories from like trans, disabled, like black teens, you know, like people who face real oppression, not like tall white girls. And Netflix literally inserted a monologue for her to like clap back at the
criticism.
So funny. Yeah, very bizarre. She's just like, this is my life and I have faced discrimination. So yeah, then the teacher's like, oh my god, that was so beautiful, you've got the part. So okay. Easily won over.
So she gets the part.
And she's like upset. Then she starts to hear like a voice in her head, like her inner critic, let's call it.
But it's also like really funny, like morphed, like, you think you have talent,
oh my God,
but you don't. It's like, what is the sound effect on this?
This is one of the flimsiest plot devices I have ever encountered in a teen movie, and that is saying something. This thing, this like inner critic, is like basically the whole film hinges on her, like every time she does something, she hears this voice in her head telling her she's bad.
People hate you.
What if
you think
you love you?
You think you have friends, but you don't. No. She's like, no, I gotta stop this.
How do I stop
the voice in my head? Also, like, she's never experienced insecurity or self-doubt, as if she's like just come from a coma or like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
the whole first movie was meant to be about her feeling insecure about like, are we supposed to believe that this is her first? Like, I don't know. This film was the most phoned in movie we've done yet. Genuinely, like this. I think they probably like did just filter it through like random plot generator, like tidied it up, spent a few hours tidying it up a bit, and then went, yeah, it's good to go. But yeah, she starts having this inner voice, very subtle, and she asks her hot sister what she should do, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with this, other girls in the pageant scene used to have it, never
I
me
don't.
Yeah, I
no.
know she's like,
I'm a psychopath as well, yeah. I don't have emotions just like you in the first movie.
Yeah, I'm a sociopathic narcissist who's also hot. Her sister's preparing for a job. That's like a side plot that
no one cares about.
Why is this in the movie?
Her sister's finally moving out.
Also, something that made me cringe so much was like the banter that her family have. Like, there's so much like really cringy scenes with her and her parents. Like, her parents are meant to be like
crazy,
kooky, yeah, insane, like properly nuts. I feel like I wanted to remember stuff that they did, but I only wrote down who are these parents, but can you remember any specifically weird stuff they did, Heather? There's such a
weird tone
with them.
That's a weird, but they had that in the first movie, that sister had a really weird tone that was meant to be funny, but it was just strange. And in this movie, the parents, they're talking about that sister moving to LA, and then they're like, should we have another baby? And the mom's like, I'm very fertile. And then the kids are like, ew! I'm like, strange.
Yeah.
Strange joke.
It's just not even really a joke. It's just like, okay.
A strange remark.
Yeah. This isn't funny. It's, yeah, the stuff with her parents are also meant to be a source of comic relief, and none of it lands. So basically, yeah, she's suffering with this. There's a sort of Sharpay Evans character who
was apparently in the first movie, but I could not remember for the life of me. Kimmy,
couldn't pick this girl out of a lineup.
And also her
makeup was so bad. I just want to say, whoever was doing the makeup on this movie, this girl was orange. It was so bad. She's like comically evil for no reason.
Yeah,
she has a sidekick who's a guy who like also has a crush on Jodie.
Apparently they kissed in the first movie.
I think they kissed when they were like in middle school. And
no, they kiss in an escape room.
But I think, didn't they just reference that?
No, I think that happens in the first movie.
Oh, does it? Oh, right.
Well, yeah,
okay.
Who cares? Look, but yeah.
Who am I to say what happened in the first movie? Okay?
Do you think we have some really, like, tall girl purists listening who are raging at us for forgetting every detail?
Well, where were they when there was no Wikipedia plot on the page for a month?
Right.
They should be spending their time doing that.
You're a stan or you're not a stan?
There is no middle ground when it comes to tall girl. So, yeah. What happens next?
Well, there's a whole side plot of her best friend, who the movie should be about, because she seems way more fun and interesting, Farida.
Mm-hmm.
Something to do with her getting a clothing line. I completely forgot she wanted to be a designer. Stig. Everyone's really mean to Stig. Like really harsh. I forgot what he did to her.
It couldn't be that bad. I can't remember what he did to her either. Did he not tell her that he had a girlfriend or something?
Yeah, it was really I remember.
I genuinely have no idea.
But they keep referencing, but also in an explanatory way. They're like, God, you only had one kiss in the escape room. Get over it. You're like, oh, they're like, but even that's not ringing a bell. But so yeah, I wish they did that with Stig, because he seems like a real cutie. At one point, he's singing ABBA, dreamy.
Yeah, that part was good. Yeah, so Farida gets what she deserves. And I mean, like, in a good way.
Because
she ends up getting with Stig, who is hot, tall, sexy Swedish man.
Swedish.
Sing ABBA. But we haven't got to that part yet, so...
Okay, I know what happens next. I know, I've just remembered.
The romantic dinner.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they have... Dunkelman throws a romantic dinner that Stig cooks.
No 16-year-old boy would ever... Like, the house is covered in candles. It's such a fire hazard. There are candles everywhere. There are, like, thousands of candles. And as usual in movies, the dad is just like, don't do anything that'll upset your mother. But, like, it's fine if you just want to take over my house with a romantic candlelit dinner where there's thousands of candles everywhere. I'll just go and do my dad stuff in the shed or whatever. Whatever. Anyway, yeah, Stig cooks it because Dunkelman fucks it up.
So that's an unnecessary, like, it's meant for the first part of the movie. It was just loads of scenes of Stig trying to be their friend.
It's real
strange being this, like, big blonde himbo. But yeah, so Dunkelman cooks her dinner. She's wearing some hideous fucking, like, Bershka looking skater dress as well. Like, Jesus, the fact Netflix must have a subscription to, like, or not.
I'm pretty sure Tessa wore that exact dress to the New Year's Eve party.
In this universe, these girls all share one wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly.
bland blonde girl wardrobe. And they're having this romantic dinner. It's all Stig keeps waiting on them. The dad keeps creepily taking photos. Strange. The parents are meant to be, like, overprotective in a funny way, but it's just, like, imagine that was your... Ugh. So he's being, like, really, really into her boyfriend again, and, like, I'm just, like, you're finally pursuing your dream. It's like, whoa, it's the fucking School Musical. Calm your fucking tits. Like, she's not applying for Juilliard. Calm down.
Juilliard does get a mention. How could it not, as a teen movie with a musical?
Is there only one school in, like, the United States that does arts?
Hey, it's the best. But anyway.
Okay, Zac Efron. So... he's like, I'm so proud of you pursuing your dream. And she's like, I shouldn't have dreams. And then he's like, but if you really are you busy, and, like, I would understand if you'd have to, like, you know, use all this time to rehearse. And she just gets up and he's like, where are you going? And she's like, you said it was okay for me to leave if I had to. And then
she actually leaves. And
she's like, I don't have an appetite.
And then he's like, oh, you're going. And she's like, yeah, you said it was okay if I left. And he's like, oh, yeah, but I didn't think you'd actually do it. And she's like, well, why did you say it then if you didn't mean it? And it's like, this is the dumbest fight I've ever seen. First of all, because there's actually absolutely no fucking way that anyone would do that. Like, she's meant to be an emotionally aware and also kind of insecure type of person. So if you're that type of person, you A, know that when people say, oh, it's okay if you do this, but they don't mean it, that they don't actually mean it. And B, you wouldn't want to upset your boyfriend who just like organized this like romantic candlelit dinner by just saying, oh yeah, no, I'm actually gonna go and like rehearse my lines instead. Like, no, that's like a sociopathic thing to do. And then you're supposed to believe that she's just like a normal teenage girl. Like, that just doesn't compute.
Exactly. Like, also, would you not rather spend with your boyfriend than... Yeah, it's just so strange, but then...
I mean, I wouldn't want to spend a second in this guy's company, but we're meant to believe that she's in love with him. So if you want us to suspend our disbelief and believe that this tall, hot girl could be in love with this absolute fucking dweeby simp, you have to, like, show us that she loves him and not that she's just at the slot at the first... The first offer of getting out of his house, she's like, taxi?
That's funny. Yeah. He's like, if you really need to go, like, you know, I'm supporting you. I'd understand. She goes, oh, thanks. And just shoves her chair backwards and gets up.
They haven't even started eating yet.
I know, right? So then they have a whole fight, which leads to them breaking up.
They break up in the cafeteria. It's very dramatic. It's meant to be funny. Stig's there, like, trying to...
Mediate.
Like always and always saying
being
the wrong
so Swedish
thing.
And silly.
Yeah, oh, it's just so Swedish. And they break up, and then Stig's sister arrives.
Oh god, why did they bring her? This movie tries a lot.
It really does. It throws a lot of shit at the wall, and not all of it sticks.
No, definitely not.
So his sister turns up. She's also hot and Swedish.
And a bit weird.
She's got a thing going on with the guy back home, but she finds out that he's been cheating on her. So her and Dunkelman kind of have like a fake relationship. They post on social media to make Jodie
But it's
jealous.
Not even... I thought they were going to like make them jealous, but they weren't even trying to do that. It wasn't like, you know, or I thought they would have maybe a kiss or something, but no.
But no.
Also, because, oh yeah, we forget an important thing to mention that Jodie ends up kissing Tommy.
Yeah. So her co-star.
And that Dunkelman finds that out. And they've broken up. Jodie kisses Tommy after they do a La La Land thing and dance and like...
The old fairground.
Sort of like fairy lit.
Yeah. Whatever.
Fairy lights everywhere. Fairground. It's all romantic. And they do a jive. And then they kiss. She confesses up this to Dunkelman. And he's furious. And then he has a... friendship with Stella, the sister, in which they just post fun pictures of puppies and them on the gram.
Yeah, they just somehow managed to meet a lot of different puppies and do like 50 different couple activities in one day. And she's scrolling through them like, oh my god, oh, I miss Dunkelman. Anyway, then this film is so boring. There's so much filler. At the first night party... Tommy invites her to. He says that people bring like something to burn, like us to symbolically burn their anxieties or fear about the first night of the show. So she burns the stripper heels that Dunkelman gave her for the prom. Like, good riddance, good for her. but that's like very symbolic of her like coming to terms with their breakup. And I was like, you know what? Maybe they actually are gonna stay broken up. Wouldn't that just be great if?
Gemma, surely you're not that naive,
no,
right?
No, I dared to dream, Heather, because he is so gross. Like, he is one of the... He wears, like, those... You know, like, those long-sleeved t-shirts that are also a hoodie? That, like... Do you know what I mean? He wears, like, hoodie shirts. Like, it's a shirt, but it has a hood. If any of you know what I mean, it's like something that guys would wear in, like, 2008, like, teenage boys. It's a very, very bad look. I'll post one on Instagram.
You know what I am? What I realized about this movie as well. Sorry, like interrupting you. There's a very clear color scheme.
Oh,
can
yeah.
you guess what it is?
Is it
the two colors?
Is it like bright blue and
another one?
Yellow?
No, orange.
Orange,
everything's
yeah.
like teal and orange,
that's
or like a slight variant. It's so. Thought through and like not subtle, like they had like a Pinterest board and they just made the whole movie look like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
The aesthetics for these Netflix teen movies are the thing That's what they spend like 80% of the budget on. About 10% goes on the script, and the other 10% goes on the talent.
But because first I noticed in the scene when she's having dinner with her parents, and I was like, that's funny. They're all wearing like different shades of teal, and like there's all bits of like orange, kind of burnt orange, and in the background and sort of on the table. I was like, that's okay. Well, this, you know, the movies are very stylized. And I was like, wait a minute, they've pulled this theme through the whole movie. So if you look at like every scene has like kind of orangey, teal or bluish, like that's the whole vibe.
Very,
whole
very well spotted. I do think they do it so well that you don't even really notice it, but you do have the strange feeling that everything does look the same. But I didn't notice that it was specifically those colors. But I feel like To All the Boys has that as well. The like,
yeah,
the
but
mint,
that's pink
the
and
mint
like
green and pastel pink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this is, but you know, if you don't, please never watch it again. But if for some, for the people who listen to the
episodes
first,
yeah, please don't say
first,
if you watch it again.
No, then you have to check yourself into an institution.
Yeah,
if you do.
I do.
But if you listen to this episode and then decide to watch the movie, like pay attention to it, because it's bizarrely like evident, I think.
Yeah.
Because you would think, yeah, it's more the vibe that it creates, like to All the Boys when everything's like matchy matchy. But this is full on. They went ham with it. But yeah.
So
anyway, sorry.
No, that was it. That was a good tangent. I liked it. So. Then she is, yeah, she's stressed about, like, not performing well in the play. Like, she has this voice all the time telling her that she's not good enough to be in the play, that should have gone to the part, should have gone to the mean girl who's, like, you know, the Sharpay, like, thought the part was hers. Now she's the understudy. Pretty classic teen movie stuff. She has a funny Zac Efron moment where there are giant posters of her all around the school. Did you notice that?
No, I missed that. I can't believe I missed that.
She's like walking up the stairs and she sees like a poster of herself. And she has a panic attack at some point as well.
Oh yeah.
Which feels oddly placed in this film. Because
I know
the film is so low stakes and so like so kind of cynical in its execution, because it's just so nothingy. It doesn't really play into any real emotions. But the fact that she like has a proper panic attack and they kind of like have the opportunity to, I don't know, like do something with that, but then they just kind of don't, is like, oh, okay.
But it also feels very bizarrely placed.
Yeah.
That all of it's not like she's been like dealing with panic attacks throughout the movie, or it's just all of a sudden she has the weird voice in her head, but then all of a sudden she has a panic attack, and then it feels like the makers were like, okay, we get the green light, but the board of health and safety has we have to put a scene in, or like that we do, you know what I mean? It feels so like bizarrely placed and random.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It felt very out of sync with the rest of the movie. Like,
that's
too,
why it's
too,
so strange.
Too serious for this, like,
exactly,
nothing of a film.
But maybe they're trying really something really serious. Was same with the voice that's so, like, the stupid voice in her head. Well, not stupid, like, because
oh,
everyone
they really
has that.
Didn't pull that off. Wow.
No, but it's so they're trying a more serious note, but then the algorithm who wrote this got it completely wrong, because it's not human.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so bad. And then Dunkelman does something equally as sociopathic as her, like, just being like, okay then, and leaving the romantic dinner. Farida has a birthday party, which is at like a Chinese restaurant where there's also karaoke, and she's with Stig Dunkelman, and Stig's sister and her parents. And this is where her and Stig realize that they like each other for the first time, and they kiss in the parking lot. As a side note, but Dunkelman and Jody have this song. What's the song?
It's the Backstreet Boys, where I don't care who you are,
who
as long as you love me, that's cool.
I don't care where you're from.
It's a tune, absolute tune.
And that's their song, her and Dunkelman. And he sings it at karaoke with Stig's sister. He sings their song with another girl. That is sociopathic!
No, I don't.
Do you not
agree
think?
Because
I do.
No, because Jody's like didn't show up. She's late for the whole dinner.
Yeah, but
she was being a bad friend again to Farida.
Yeah, but that's not no shade to him. Like,
no, but like,
you shouldn't. Don't you shouldn't, she kissed someone else. I don't know. I think that's really weird. That's their song, and he was singing it with a girl he didn't even have feelings for.
No, but she hurt him. I don't know. We're gonna agree in this.
I don't agree. I think they both behave in an insane manner that is like not conducive to you like liking them as characters. So he does that. Then luckily she doesn't see. Oh no, she does see it. She does see it, and she doesn't even like really care that much. She's sad that she got there late. And
she arrives really late for no reason. She was just at the bonfire burning her fucking
burning her shoes. Yeah, that's it.
Like, and then which the mean girl saves from the fire, and they're all like crusty and like melted plastic. So that's the start of the redemption of Kimmy, who was like mean for no reason, but suddenly is nice for no reason. Strange.
I'm realizing as we were saying, as we are relaying this plot, there is like no through line to the plot. Like, it's just a series of events. Like, it's just this happens, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. And then somehow, thank God, you get to the end of the film. Like, it's not... There's not a lot of actual plot. It's more just, like, scenes.
Yeah. I think they're trying to do is, like, Jody overcoming her new fears, which is, like, she's got new confidence, which means she's getting up on more stages, which means she has to deal with more insecurity, or, like, stage fright, I guess. So that's, and then maybe one panic attack. So I think that's what their plot is, like. I think they're trying to go for, like, an accept yourself or whoever you are.
They told us that with the first movie. We already watched this bitch get over her insecurities. They didn't need to see it again.
I know that, Gemma, but tell that to the makers of like this fucking shit show.
It's very repetitive.
And then they're just like trying loads. They just gathered all the movies that were popular in the last I don't know how many years and tried their storylines. Like hot guy comes in, and then he moves pretty quickly out of the way.
He doesn't have the personality of Marcus.
I miss Marcus.
Yeah.
And his dance revolution.
Was like one of the best things about the Kissing Booth franchise.
Yeah, he was hot, man. His little guitar. And then they move in hot new girl, jealousy thing, and they're like, that doesn't really make anything, nothing happens with that. Then they're like, stick kissing Farida, and you're like, oh, because Farida's all like, oh no, I broke girl code, Jody's going to be really upset with me. Turns out Jody doesn't give a fuck.
No.
So that's like, why did they...
She's a really good friend. She's just like, yeah, go for it. Crack on. Like, okay, cool.
Also, she was an hour late to like her, or like she missed the whole dinner party.
Personally, I would kill myself if my best friend got with like my insanely hot, tall Swedish ex-boyfriend and I was going out with Dunkelman. But
I was stuck with someone from Middle Earth. Yeah, same, but... and then they have the whole like... Someone's going out with Legolas and you're like, I'm sucking you out with Pippin, like, fuck this. And then they're trying the whole like mean girl redemption thing. The whole mean girl Kimmy has a whole thing with her sidekick that dumps her. Like, it's just strange that they wrote, it's like they had like five different writers, put them in a room, or like, okay, I'll give you like the afternoon to write something and we'll just throw it together. It doesn't matter what you do. You all pick a character and write them a storyline.
Yeah. It's so true. And then they spliced the scenes together, even though they're all written by like different people, and they didn't like the scene where Kimmy, like Kimmy's sidekick, the guy who also fancies Jody, is like, I don't want to do your dirty work anymore. That is one of the cringiest, like worst written scenes I've ever seen in a teen movie.
Bad it was so characterless. Well.
Yeah, worst acting, some of the worst acting I've ever seen. Her acting, Kimmy, I mean, thank God they didn't give her that part, because
the girl, thank God she's the understudy.
Yeah, the girl can't act. But yeah, it's a lot of just like stuff that's spliced together without any real. Yeah.
With like thought? Random dancing sprinkled on top all of a sudden.
Okay, now
and a weird voice.
Me. Yeah. I'm like, so many weird side plots, like her sister's new job and stuff. It's like, we don't care.
We don't care.
We don't care. No one cares.
Yeah, and then it turns out the sister has insecurities all along. You're like,
wow, who
gave a fuck? Who could
have predicted that? She's just like every other normal living person.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, I can't pack my boxes because I need my sister. You're like, do we care about their relationship? No, fuck no. Oh.
They have a their whole family has a creepy thing. I don't know what it is, but it just upsets me.
I know.
I just find it upsetting.
Same.
So let's wrap this up because we're actually pretty close to the end. So
yeah, thank God.
Normal American high school thing. They rent a boat for the cast to have cast party on pre first night. Yeah. So they have a party on a boat. Classic American high school stuff. And Jody and Duncan wouldn't get back together. I don't even want to give it more pomp and ceremony than that, because I can't. Maybe you remember what happened.
No, it's just he does it. He has a bit of a Love Actually moment that she looks at his camera and there's pictures of her on it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And then we have a really Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen thing when they show like two scenes of the musical that they've done. And you're like, why am I watching a musical within a stupid movie? Like,
she definitely just wanted the chance to show off her dance moves. 100%.
Her mom must have really
pushed for that
crusade for this. Yeah, because her dance mom.
But, once a dance mom, always a dance mom.
Yeah, like that. I wrote down who requested the dancing. Spend more time with the plot, guys.
But yeah, they do. Yeah, she's a good dancer. Like I said, she's okay.
Yeah, she's not great. So. I think for the copious amounts of random dancing, okay. So yeah, that's the end.
Yeah, it really is.
Right,
it really
that
is.
That is the end.
Yeah, yeah.
That she has a party in her
insane garden looks like a restaurant garden. When I saw them having dinner there the first time, I was like, oh, they're at a beautiful outdoor restaurant. And then I realized it's actually their house.
Yeah,
pretty crazy.
The tourism board for La New Orleans also spend money in this one. There's some more shots of New Orleans. Not as much as the first one.
They money into this movie. See, it had the desired effect. Watching these films, the only positive effect these films had on me was to be like, I actually really want to go to New Orleans.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I want to be like,
That is the only kernel of positivity that I took away from these movies.
Yeah, and that's Swedish. Well, no, he's not even Swedish. He's an American actor, the guy who plays Stig.
Is he actually?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's really ruined him for me. I guess that's why his voice sounds so goofy.
He's like, oh, I don't know how to eat beignet. No.
Don't you know you're not supposed to blow on it?
Yeah. God, that could be sexual.
Right? Yeah, him and his sister did seem pretty close.
That's Swedish for you. That's Sweden for you.
That's what I mean. Americans are like, oh yeah, they're all, you know, they're weird, those Swedes. They're probably all fucking each other. They just have a, I don't know, just can't get past it. Okay, so that's it. I mean, they have a little dance party at the end in Jodie's garden.
To Backstreet Boys song.
That's it. That's the end of the movie. God, that was underwhelming. This is probably the most underwhelming film I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I feel like this episode has been funny, but maybe also a little bit underwhelming because there's literally nothing you can do with this plot.
No, we've said everything there is to say. It's boring, it's random, it's kind of pretty to look at, I guess, but then it has really uncharismatic main characters that are on the verge of unlikable even.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, Gemma, I was on my phone for most of it.
Oh yeah, big time, big phone movie. And you didn't miss much because everything is so random that you miss a scene and it's like, well, they never come back to that, so
yeah,
whatever.
At least After is kind of bad, also really bad, but more funny bad.
Exactly, that's what I mean. There's more to... You can kind of connect somewhat with After because it's like, yeah, it's funny bad and it's like melodramatic, whereas this film is just like background noise. This could just like, there's nothing to latch onto. There's nothing where you're like, oh my God, that's so funny, or like, that's so relatable. It's just like,
yeah.
It just moves along at the same frequency. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There's no highs and lows.
Maybe it'd be a good airplane movie, you know?
Yeah, sure, yeah. If you want to watch something on a teeny tiny screen and you don't want to waste like a good movie on that, then...
Yeah, that's my tip.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to get into bingo?
I certainly do. trips over.
Oh, you would think she'd trip over.
Yeah.
My tall friend always says that she's scared to like stand next to really low fences because her like tipping point is like kind of high up. Do you know what I mean? Her like point of.
Yeah, I relate. I mean, I'm not that tall.
You're not that tall.
I'm not that tall, but I am. I am tall, and I think being tall makes me clumsy.
You've got tiny feet, Gemma. I'm surprised how you're like standing up.
That's what
Gemma's like the size. I don't know what you are in British sizes.
Four and a half to five.
That's like a 37, and you're like what? You're taller than I am.
5'9". Yeah, I know. It's hard. That's what I always say. That like that's why I'm so clumsy because my tiny feet can't support my
and big boobs.
Tall body.
So like your weight is distributed strangely on your body.
It really. It's no wonder I'm always just toppling over. It's like whoa, there she goes again.
you're one of those like old fashioned toys that is like round at the bottom, so you're like rolling.
Yeah, like
over.
Spinning top. Yeah. My feet can't support my boobs. Whoa. Yeah, so it's hard being a tall girl. Like this movie is for me. If you're wondering who this film is for. Ali wrote a really, really good Letterboxd review of this film, which is my girlfriend is 5'9" and sobbed throughout after seeing her experience validated for the first time in cinema. So yeah, I put on
That's
a front
really
I put on a front for this episode, but like really it was very emotional. Trips over, so I don't think she does. No, she's not
no.
clumsy. Dead parent, no. This movie's no. way too happy-go-lucky. I wish something bad would happen to one of the characters.
Jesus.
Sorry, but I do. Like, get some real fucking problems. Hollywood dad. Yeah.
No.
No, he definitely is. Like, their parents are obsessed with her.
Yeah, that's true. Way too supportive.
Yeah, they're weird. Sexual assault, no.
No.
Mean Girl Redemption, yes.
Yes,
big time.
Big time. Big time. For no reason. They weren't even friends in middle school.
Kindergarten. Yeah, they didn't even whip out that old chestnut.
They didn't even whip out the friendship bracelets that are like from the 90s.
Yeah, so oh yeah, I guess we forgot to mention that Kimmy like is the one that comforts Jody and gets her over her first nightmare.
Gemma,
we're way too late.
Yeah,
whatever. No one cares, but I just felt like we had to wrap it up. Blanket heteronormativity. Are there any gay people in this?
I don't think so.
I don't think there are either, which is kind of weird actually, seeing as it's so like Netflixy. Dream bedroom. Yeah,
yes.
Definitely. Their whole house is like.
Oh,
imagined.
I would live in that garden.
Yeah. Makeover scene? Not really.
She's got a makeover
by the
Roomba that's doing like the hair
yeah.
and makeup.
Yeah, but if it's not actually in the movie, I don't think we can include it. Crazy teen rager?
No.
No, I guess it's not. Annoying sibling?
Yes.
Really? You think that her sister is an annoying sibling?
No. I'm just thinking of the quirky male. Okay, no, she's not an annoying sibling. She's a hot sibling.
Yeah. You're throwing away your dream?
No.
No. Quirky male friend?
Yes.
Yes. Dunkelman is like in the like hall of fame for annoying quirky male friends. Like he might.
Yeah.
That's the only thing this film should be like. That's the only award that this film would win is like creating the most annoying male lead of all time, like the most annoying.
Well, he's up there. He's up there with Ducky. I mean,
obviously that's very, very much who his character is based on. Like
yeah.
that's they even look the same. Like it's a very, heavy handed. Yeah. But you know, he's at least Ducky has the virtue of I don't know being in a cool movie.
Yeah.
So. 8 points out of 30. Not very high. Not very high.
And zero in our hearts.
And 0 points in my heart.
Yeah.
Zero points for entertainment, that's for sure.
Okay, well, I'm glad that's over. So
Heather's ready to wrap this shit up. Well, I hope this episode doesn't get 0 points for entertainment.
I'm sure it won't. And I hope people will stop sending us the trailer for this movie now, and that'll be disgusted as well. Don't want to hear about this movie ever again. It's banned from my brain cells.
Yeah, people, you lot did get really excited when this was released, and despite, like, Heather and I went against our better judgment to watch it and record this episode, and that's, like, frankly the last time that we're ever going to get the listeners to have any input. We're just completely, like, you know, we don't, from now on, we don't accept any feedback. Our DMs are closed. Just kidding, obviously, our DMs are always open.
Please send
DMs. Always want to hear from you guys. We love watching shitty movies like this and talking about them. That's, like, literally what we do this. So.
And we love hearing what you think of the episodes, and we love getting your reviews on Apple Podcasts
and stuff like that. We certainly do love getting those reviews, so please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. DM us on Instagram, follow us at Yes Another Teen Movie, and we'll be back next month with another corker of a
shitty
film.
Maybe
we'll try and pick something actually good this time.
Yeah, it'll be good.
I feel like
we
deserve it.
We deserve a palate cleanser after this plate of shite.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Okay, I love
bye
you.
Everyone.
Bye.